Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of the Spirit of Life in Ibiza podcast. To get to our location for the final podcast of the series, my guest and I have just taken a beautiful walk from Cala Teresa to Cala Conta. This is one of Ibiza's most popular beaches, home to the infamous Sunset Ashram and one of the best beaches to watch the sunset from. On the walk, we passed Es Vedra, the Time and Space Memorial, and the infamous gates that are in many a picture. From this location, we have made our way round to a beautiful cave, which some may know as the Rave Cave, and it is here that we have sat to do our podcast. Today's guest, Kai, is a well-known club promoter who set up events and brands such as Abode and Hotbed here on the island, as well as in London and various other locations. Despite being heavily linked into the party scene, Kai is now 29 weeks sober, overcoming many challenges that come from not only getting clean, but getting clean while still connected to the party world. Kai is a man of many incredible ideas, ideas which he follows through with and brings into fruition. One of these ideas was to set up a non-profit organisation, the Abode Project School in Uganda. Here Kai is bringing together both his passion and his contacts in music by teaching the kids to DJ, amongst many other skills that will be honed and integrated into the school. So welcome, Kai. I'm very much looking forward to how this one's going to unfold.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me down. Lovely walk getting here, and I'm looking forward to spending the next hour with you talking about me.
It's all about you, Kai. So we've obviously just done this incredible walk, which I'm really grateful you brought me on, because I've heard a lot about some of the locations that we passed, but I've never actually been to. So it was a beautiful experience for me. But the reason we've come on this walk today is because since giving up alcohol, and congratulations on being 29 weeks sober, by the way, you've really found your place in walking. This has been a little bit of an inspiration for you. Would you want to tell us a little bit about that journey?
Yeah, of course. So Sunday just passed was my 29th week with no drink and no drugs in my body. I found that walking for me has healed me. It's been something to keep me busy. I was in the army for quite a few years as a youngster, so keeping fit and getting out walking and running was something that I do on a daily basis. And I've kind of put off walking for years. I got a bit lazy due to the lifestyle I had, if I wasn't partying, I was sleeping or lounging around and drinking and eating junk food. But yeah, I went out on a walk around about 2 or 3 months ago with the local walking club, Ibiza Walking Club. And I was hooked from one walk there's around about 20 people on the walk. And it was like a networking walk. And after that one walk, I was so hooked. I went to Decathlon and ended up buying a step counter and walking boots and a new backpack. And yeah, from that day, I've been going out on my own every day, started inviting other people. And I've been out every day for the last, God knows what, 20 weeks now. We do some big walks, some short walks across the island, and I've started to do 20K walks most days now on different viewpoints of the island. So yeah, I'm discovering the island in a completely different way to what I normally would do, which would either be by car or just by sitting on a sofa watching the sun come up and down.
Or partying. And so you've actually been inspired by these walks that you're doing and the healing process that it's given you to actually look at creating walking retreats. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so for me, what I've realised now is if I'm feeling a bit down in the morning, not depressed, but just you have a bad start to the morning, I've realised that going out walking now for me just completely clears my brain for 2 to 3 hours. I put my phone down, switch off, and I can walk 2 to 3 hours in a day, and I come back from that walk now getting the same buzz as what I used to when I was taking cocaine or, drinking cocktails and things. And I think a lot of, especially I see it now on social media, I've got quite a lot of followers that I've gained through being a promoter. And so many kids talking about being depressed and anxiety. And I think a lot of them in my circle, it's normally drug induced. It's normally the reason they're feeling like that is purely because they've taken drugs all weekend, and on a Monday or Tuesday they feel like shit. That's normally the case. It's not always the case, but in my circle it is. So I'm kind of like, well, if we can get these youngsters out and about and get them active and get them walking, but do it somewhere where they can still go to the club, so they can still get their fix of Ibiza, then why not? So I'm looking at, we are launching retreats in 2020. which is targeting the younger audience. And we're aiming to do 4 days. It's all going to be for charity, 25 kilometres a day. And each person has to raise a particular amount. And the money that we raise from the walk-in is going to be donated to mental health charities within dance music. One of them is going to be the Avicii Foundation, which was set up by Avicii's mum and dad. If you don't know who Avicii is, obviously he's one of the world's biggest EDM artists that committed suicide last year. So, yeah, I believe that walking can heal people that are currently broken or, you know, feel in a bad place. And I just think Ibiza's got so much to offer. And from my experience of coming here over the last 20 years on holiday, is if I wasn't in a club, I'd be either in the room cracking on or I'd be sat around the pool probably cracking on. And I know that is pretty much most of the people that come to Ibiza in my circle spend most of their time just taking drugs. And, you know, you can actually still go and see beautiful parts of the island through nature and walking, but you still go to the clubs at night. It's not a problem going to the clubs at night, but we just want to get people up and about and out of bed and get them walking and get them active. So, yeah, I think it's a gap in the market. It's something we're doing for charity. So hopefully it's going to raise a lot of money for mental health charities. But, yeah, that I can't go into too much detail, but that will be launching in March 2020.
I absolutely love that idea. And I think, you know, the idea of getting people connected back to nature, especially on this beautiful island, which is so easy to do, because, you know, what you were saying there in your circles, a lot of people, the depression and the frustrations that happen are as a result of being on the back end of a massive bender. But I think that's the case for a lot of people. And if it's not the back end of a massive bender, it's the idea of needing drugs to connect to something, because many of us just feel disconnected because our society is set up in a way that is very difficult for us to connect into. So I think getting that connection back to nature again and just allowing people to feel something, because I feel that sometimes we're so busy trying to feel and then we aren't able to feel what it is that we should be feeling, that we end up trying to numb some of that pain by taking the drugs in the first place. So, yeah, that connection back to nature and back to self, and it's meditative as well. It gives people that time to, of course, connect with other people and talk to each other. Make new connections, but it also gives you that time and space just to be alone with your own thoughts as well, which I think can be very healing, although sometimes difficult to go through at the same time as well. And I imagine with your process of stepping back from the intensity of the party world, you've probably had a few dark thoughts yourself as you've been going through your process of moving away from alcohol and drugs.
Yeah, so like I said, it's 29 weeks now. I had a real shit time in June this year. It was self-inflicted from years and years of drug abuse. I wasn't a big alcohol drinker, but I drank the alcohol so that the drugs didn't kind of make me feel shit. So, you know, we're talking 20 years of drug taking, probably 50 weeks a year. The last 5 years in Ibiza, with doing two parties a week, you know, I'd probably say it's 3 or 4 days a week I was on some kind of drug. And yeah, June this year had a real rough patch, felt super lonely, super depressed. And yeah, I think it was June the 2nd or June the 3rd. I just wanted to end it. I remember driving around Ibiza in my car. I left the house and I was in my head initially was looking for places to basically hang myself. That was the end goal. I never went through with it. I bottled it for whatever reasons, probably guilt and maybe just not having a bottle to do it. And I felt like I had no one to go to. I didn't know, I think people saw the signs of me having a breakdown, and then when I eventually had a breakdown, you know, the people I thought I could rely on just weren't there for me, you know. And I've got a lot of people around me, and apart from my partner and my family, that was pretty much it. And I was like, if I'm 37 years old and I've been in this industry 7 years and I'm at the top of the game and I feel like I've got nowhere to turn to, then what are other people supposed to do in the dance? What are the punters supposed to do? If there's a promoter at my level that doesn't, you know, what charity do I go to? Who do I call? Where do I turn? I was thinking, well, where are these other people going to go? So this is why, obviously, one of the reasons I stopped and one of the reasons I'm so passionate now, especially online, being quite vocal about, you know, just trying to teach these youngsters. And I call them youngsters because they're 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, and I'd like to think I'm being double their age, I'm entitled to call these guys youngsters now. You know, the drugs they're taking now aren't drugs around when I was young. You know, it was just pills and cocaine when I was young growing up. But now it's ketamine, it's GHB or GB, which is that kind of liquid drug, acid, and they're mixing them all together. And there's more deaths, there's more mental health cases, there's more suicide, depression cases. Everywhere I turn on Instagram or Facebook, it's just depressing. People writing depressing statuses. And yeah, for me, it was just like, I need to stop. If I can stop, I can help other people not stop, because I feel at the moment that if drugs were to stop within the dance music world, the dance music world would crumble. Almost like if we run out of petrol and oil tomorrow, the car market would crumble. You know, but the way I see where I'm kind of going is I'm kind of like the kind of solar powered eco cars, or the battery powered cars. You know, there's a small market for people that kind of wanna do the partying and wanna go out clubbing and stuff, and they wanna do it, you know, in a healthy way. You know, and that's kind of where I am. I'm not saying to everyone stop doing drugs. You know, they're really bad for you, because I had the best times of my life on drugs. You know, the best times, and I don't believe I could have recreated that on just alcohol alone, or even sober. So yeah, the position I'm in at the moment, I'm just trying to educate youngsters that, you know, you don't have to take as many drugs. There are other there's other opportunities to go out and party and dance without taking them, which is something we'll come on to later with my new sober party. But yeah, I was in a shit place this year, and I'm now 29 weeks later, I'm probably in the best place I've been that I can ever remember in my life. The last time I was on a down was probably in the army. So I'm now 29 weeks later, probably the happiest, in the best shape I've been in, mentally, physically, financially. Yeah, and it's funny that I stopped drinking and stopped taking drugs. So yeah,
thank you so much for sharing all that with us. And there's so much that you've said there, that there's so much I want to comment on that I don't even know where to start with it. But thank you for your vulnerability there with sharing how dark things got for you. And I, for one, am very, very pleased that you managed to push through that, because, as I have mentioned, you do have these incredible ideas which you are bringing into fruition. And I feel that you're someone who really has a lot to share with the world. And certainly through your experiences, I think people will be able to relate to you. So you're already doing great work, but I think there's going to be even more great work coming from you. And I'm really looking forward to watching this space. You mentioned, conscious dancing. And yeah, I think it's so important, because the one thing I know is when I stopped taking drugs, I found that I couldn't dance as well just on alcohol as I did on drugs. And then take it one step further and stop drinking alcohol, I found I couldn't dance at all. And I found this really strange, because I danced as a kid. It's not like I can't dance. But there was this mental block around it. Everything around dancing was wrapped up in drink and drugs. And I actually had to go to something called Five Rhythms, which is a kind of a two-hour dance. I don't know if it's ecstatic dance, but dance meditation type thing. And I had to go there on quite a few occasions just to get my body used to dancing sober. It was a barrier I had to push through. And the thing with dancing, dancing is one of the most natural things. It's so good for our soul, and we've lost it to drink and drugs. So yeah, I for one am very excited to see what ventures you come up with in terms of the sober partying.
Yeah, so I'm totally with you there. I believed that when I was younger, growing up, I thought I classed myself as a fairly good dancer, and the older I got, even on the drugs, you do lose your rhythm a little bit. But you still, the drugs and the drink kind of still make you move your body. And then, yeah, for me, that's probably one of the scariest things of me thinking, oh, fuck, if I drink and drugs, I'm not going to be able to dance. And the reality is, I probably can't at the moment. I've got two events. One's called Hotbed, which is kind of feel-good house music, vocal, soulful, which I can actually, you'd never see me on a dance floor, but I'd always be kind of backstage, just kind of jigging, moving left and right. But yeah, you probably won't see me on a dance floor in a club now where people are on drugs dancing. Probably my own insecurities, probably an ego. It's something I'm trying to break down at the moment, but yeah, I'm sure it's something that will come with time. You know, I've met a lot of people recently that have gone sober, and they said the same, that, you know, they're really struggling to fit in and dance and enjoy themselves and let their hair down. So my friend Amph Lowther, who I know very well from his parties, he runs many parties, he's been around the dance music industry for years. He runs an event called Rise and Shine in the UK, which is a sober party. very spiritual compared to the party that we're starting, but it is still an amazing party. Probably one of the biggest parties in London, I think, at the moment, that is a non-alcohol party. So we're starting a new event called Believe in London in the new year, myself and my business partners. It's a sober event where we are encouraging people to leave behind the booze, leave behind the drugs. We are going to have zero alternatives, so there's going to be no other alternatives to kind of get you high or natural highs. We just want people to be high purely on the music and the atmosphere. It's going to be in a really amazing venue in London. We're going to have guest panels, which will interview some very influential people within the dance music world that are in rehab, that are in recovery or have been through rehab and have come out on the other side. We'll be interviewing guests from the crowd that are also in recovery. But the most important thing is you will still be able to get your fix of music. Now, what's amazing about this party is the event will be on a Tuesday night, and we found from research that the stigma around the word Suicide Tuesday is when most people, youngsters, are feeling at their lowest on a Tuesday. It's normally their second day back at work. It's normally the drugs have started to wear off after the weekend, and it's when they have funny thoughts, crazy thoughts go through their head. So we're thinking, well, if we can get these people after work on a Tuesday night to come to a venue in London under the arches of a railway station, we can convert this arch into this beautiful space. We can educate them. We can give them advice through different methods, whether it be we have drug counsellors, whether we've got psychiatrists, whether we've got fitness and nutrition experts, which we're going to have all of these here. But most importantly, you're still going to be able to dance, because we're going to have some amazing house, techno, drum and bass and garage DJs that will play music from 8 till midnight. Now, the idea is to stop the party at midnight, because I think when you're not taking drugs or drink, it's hard to dance all night. And it's one of my phobias of, oh, fucking hell, I'm going to have to stay up till 6 a.m. and dread it. But now, you know, if you can get your fix and finish at 12 and go home and go to bed and get up for work, but you still feel like you've been to a rave and everyone around you is on that same vibe, and I think, you know, it's a stepping stone for people in the right direction. And, you know, I'm not trying to say don't go to clubs, don't go to festivals, because at the end of the day, this is where I make my money and it's an important part of my business. But there is an alternative that I'm going to be putting on for people like me that have struggled or are suffering, that want to go and party around like-minded people that are sober. So, yeah, that's coming in 2020 in London.
I'm looking forward to that, and I think I actually happen to be in London for the launch night, so I'll be coming along. There is a conscious shift at the moment that's happening. There are many people who are consciously choosing to stop drinking alcohol or to stop taking drugs. There are also many people who are maybe going the other way and hitting rock bottom with it, and then maybe being forced to stop drinking and taking drugs. So I think it's amazing to see that there is a growing support network, not only in the party scene, but there's a growing support network of people coming out and talking about this kind of stuff. You know, male suicide rates are incredibly high. So it's great to have somebody like yourself, who people do look up to and respect in that world, who are, you know, openly talking out and saying, hey, yeah, I've been through this. So I think that's incredible. But I'd really like to know, what got you into taking drugs in the first place? What would you say was the thing that took you there?
That's a great question. I haven't been asked that before, but yeah, I remember as a kid growing up, I had a really good upbringing. My mum and dad are amazing, they're still together, had a really healthy upbringing. I had an amazing sister. But I do remember as a kid being brought up around alcohol a lot. Not alcoholics, but I remember I come from a very large family, an Irish family, and all of my aunties and my uncles and my mum and my dad, it was just, they drank a lot. But back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and I suppose when I grew up in the 80s, drinking was quite a big thing. You know, we had a lot of weddings and christenings, and, you know, I'd be dragged to the pub every weekend, and, you know, if you wanted to go home, your parents would go, we're not going home, just put three chairs together and lie down there. So I was brought up around drinking and smoking, but I don't think I ever heard about drugs until I was a teenager. So yeah, I was kind of brought up in pubs and parties. And then I think I've never tried a cigarette in my life, weirdly, and I never smoked weed in my life. So I was never a kid that was kind of pushed into kind of try this cigarette or try this. But when I joined the army, I remember when I was 18, I went out with a load of soldiers, a load of my friends, to a club in Brighton, and they were all taking E's. And I'd never taken anything in my life, never thought about it. And they were like, try one. I was like, what's it do? And they were like, well, you get really feel amazing. And I was like, can you die? And they were like, yeah. I was like, but you won't. And I was like, okay, beef's it. And I remember taking it, and that was it. Fucking life was just the first pill I'd ever done. Going around the clubs, that club, and cuddling everyone and strangers and waving at everyone like an absolute... I look back now and I'm like, God, what a twat. But, you know, that's what happens. It's my first pill, and that was it for me. I was like, you, this feeling you cannot get from better than sex, better than anything. And, yeah, it's just started pills. So every weekend in the army, I was taking pills. And we were dodging a drugs test by certain methods and, yeah, taking lots and lots of pills. And then I didn't actually try any other drug. I didn't try MDMA till probably 20s. I didn't try ketamine till late 20s. But then I discovered coke at like 25, 26. But that was only, you know, I wasn't doing it every weekend. It's only kind of when I went out. But yeah, I think, yeah, drugs. Yeah, I was introduced to drugs at 16.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my first pill as well. And yeah, it's this beautiful euphoric feeling. And I guess what happens though when you take something like ecstasy or MDMA, you are connected to this beautiful feeling of love, which I think sometimes in the world that we live in, it can be quite hard to connect to that feeling of love because there's so much hate and anger in the world. But so when you feel that beautiful feeling, it's a state that we should aim to feel all the time, maybe not quite as high as when you're taking ecstasy, but certainly to feel that state of love is something that I think we should be aiming for and is achievable, but with a lot of hard work. But you mentioned coke as well. And so that's the opposite in terms of a drug, isn't it? That's if you look at MDMA being this high vibrational drug that takes you to this feeling of love, I think coke is more of a low vibrational drug that keeps you in the base level chakra. It kicks in those base level instincts. So survival, competition. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've been in many a party where everyone's taking coke and it's who can speak the loudest and the longest. And yeah. yeah, I guess the other base level instinct is fucking one coke. It's something, and I use the word fucking because that is the only way it can be described on coke. And I feel like we're all searching for something. We're searching for this connection, but we're living in a world that is, to a degree, devoid of that connection. So we're searching for this connection and we're searching to feel something. When we do coke, we're kind of still trying to feel something. By taking this drug, we numb ourselves from the thing that it is that we're trying to feel. We're fucking hard and fast, and sorry, Mum, if you're listening out there, but this is what we're doing. We're fucking hard and fast because we've desensitized ourselves. We're so numb. We're you know, all of our senses have been dulled. We're searching for this connection. We're searching to feel something. So I feel like we live in a world that is devoid of connection, but we know that we're meant to be connected to something. So we're out there searching for this connection, but when we can't, and we're searching to feel something, but when we can't feel it, and when we can't connect to it, we end up taking drugs like ecstasy to try and feel it, or we take cocaine to desensitize us from the fact that we're actually unable to find that connection. But with something like coke, and I'm going to use the word again, we could be fucking literally anyone because there is no connection there. We've desensitized ourselves from that connection and from that feeling, and by doing that we actually end up just feeding into this circle of searching and numbing and searching and numbing. So in our search for connection, we end up searching for that connection in the wrong places and in the wrong faces. And I mentioned earlier that when it comes to dancing, dancing was so wrapped up in taking drugs and drinking alcohol for me. And I'm going to be honest, I would say about 70% of my sex life was wrapped up in drugs and alcohol as well, because we, you know, even when we're in a relationship, we are going out drinking and partying with our partners. So yeah, it can be very difficult to break that cycle and to really reconnect with who you are again. But you've been on this journey of reconnection to self recently, and how are you finding it, socializing in that same circle, or are you finding that you're having to pull yourself away from that circle?
Yeah, it's been fucking really hard, to be fair. Hard in some places, like, I can go for meetings with people now that are sober, and I can leave that meeting or lunch and we're buzzing together. So with the right people around me on the same vibrations and things, I leave that meeting People I'm working with now, like Emily and Johnny, that are putting together documentaries and stuff of my festivals in Africa, we're all on the same kind of vibe and on the same path, and we buzz off each other, and I get that feeling like I did when I used to do coke. But you do get alienated, and now if I go backstage at one of my parties, or you know, backstage at a festival, I know that people are like, oh God, here he is, fucking hell, put your gear away. And they feel on edge, and they feel a bit anxious, and I totally get it, because I was in their shoes 29 weeks ago. I'm probably a bit of a hypocrite, you know, it's no secret, you know, for years and years and years I sold drugs, you know, from quite a high level to also being at the bottom of the pecking order as well. So the fact that I've just stopped taking drugs and I'm preaching about how bad they are for you now, I've obviously got a lot of stick, which I accept. You know, there's a lot of people saying that I'm a hypocrite, which they're entitled to, but it's just, I decided to do it. But it is really hard. It's really hard to now sit in a room with a load of people that are on coke. I don't struggle with alcohol, with people around alcohol, because I don't need alcohol. I can sit at a dinner table now with 10 people, as I did on Sunday when I met you. And, you know, we for the first time, you know, we all sat around and had a dinner, a roast dinner. You know, and I laughed and I giggled and I didn't need any alcohol. So, yeah, I don't really struggle, but I do struggle now being in a club around everyone that's absolutely off their tits to kind of fit in on conversations and stuff. But what I've noticed now is I'm actually seeing my events in a much different perspective to what I did before. You know, I'm seeing cracks I didn't see before because I was probably oblivious to them. Shit, how am I letting this person get away with that? You know, I'm not picking up on the crowd. You know, you pick up on everything when you're sober, and maybe I spent so many years drinking and doing drugs that I kind of missed a few things at my parties that were kind of, we could have improved. So yeah, it's, for me, I'm fine now. The first 10 weeks was difficult. Now I'm like 20, this Sunday I'll be 30 weeks. Before you know it, I'll be a year. And yeah, I'm happy. That's all that matters. I'm super, super, super happy at the moment. Happiest I've ever been. So no matter what people say about me online, and I do get a lot of stick online, or what people might say about me in WhatsApp groups, because I've had that as well. And it would have damaged me a year ago. If I'd have known I was the laughingstock of a WhatsApp group a year ago when I was on drugs, it fucking probably would have sent me over the edge. But now, I'm just like, it doesn't bother me. Doesn't bother me at all now. I'm just like, I know I'm on the right path, and I know I'm talking sense. I'm only trying to help people in what I'm saying, but I'm not trying to neg people out or stop people taking drugs. I'm just trying to say to people, look, you probably don't need to take as many. You probably don't need to do it every weekend. But yeah, everyone's got an opinion.
I don't see it as being hypocritical. I see it as being someone who's gone through a journey and come to the other side, and then is able to see the light, if you like, or to see the I don't want to say error of your ways, because you know I don't want to ever say that, you know, the journey we've been on is an error. It's a massive learning curve, and it's brought you to where you are now, and it's brought you to a place where you're actually trying to do something to help people. And I think that's incredible. I think it's a beautiful journey you've been on, despite it being incredibly difficult. I think it's a beautiful journey that has taken you to a place that you are now ready to start working in all these different ways where you can help people in these different ways. And as I said earlier, I think there'd be a lot of people who are going through stuff who will be able to connect to you because of your background of taking drugs for a long period of time and your party background, and then you're moving into this new sober lifestyle, and what you just said then is you're the happiest you've ever been. And that's incredible. If we put one message out on this podcast today, let that be it. So yeah, in terms of talking about the work that you're going to be doing, I would love to hear a little bit more about the school that you've set up in Uganda.
Okay, yeah. So the Abo Project is a government registered school in East Africa, in a town called Kibali, which is around about 7 hours away from the international airport in Uganda. It's a non-profit organisation that was set up by Abode around about 2.5 years ago. But only within the last 18 months has really started to take shape. We provide education, we provide accommodation for 100 children from some of the poorest areas of Uganda. We provide free nutritious meals a day, we provide free healthcare, we provide music, education, we provide everything. But as an English school would run in the UK, a British school, they're on, you know, English curriculum, etc. This is what we provide. We cover all costs. We've got some very large sponsors involved from the dance music world. We're just giving 100, we've got 100 kids and 11 teachers, 13 staff in total that are in full-time employment. And we're giving them an education that they wouldn't get if it wasn't for us guys going out there. You know, these kids come from very, very poor communities where the average wage for a family in that community is between $7 to $10 a month. So it is surviving out there day to day, Groundhog Day, as you'll call it. And we decided Africa. We've raised, I think, maybe 300,000 in the last 2 years for our project in Uganda. But I've done various fundraising campaigns over the last 7 years for different cancer charities, which is close to my heart, kids charities in the UK. But I do find that a lot of the money that we invest in the UK, you kind of don't know where it goes. And, you know, I know from my partner worked at Save the Children a few years back as a volunteer in the office. I know that, you know, she told me that a lot of the directors of these companies were coming in Range Rovers and high performance cars. And I was like, well, yeah, I guess these charities can't run at the levels they do with volunteers. You need to pay staff. But then, you know, I just don't believe that directors of companies for a charity should be driving around in 100 grand cars, you know, that are paid for by the charity. So, yeah, I decided to go to Africa. It was a massive risk, but, we pulled it off and we've got this beautiful school. I'm now working with one of the biggest TV production companies in the UK, one of the biggest channels, who are going to be putting together a documentary about the school, about my journey, about Abo's journey, about emerging talent from Uganda, from our school, mainly within music and kind of music production and DJs. But yeah, it's a super school. We've got amazing kids that couldn't read or write 2 years ago that are now, you know, performing at a very high level. We've got teachers that are in full-time education. We're just about to start a sustainability project, which O-Beach IB for the Beach Club are funding, which they've offered to donate £25,000 a year for this new sustainability project, which is it's called Perma Farming, which will create jobs within the village and also allow us to grow our own food, which will bring our costs down our monthly costs down at the moment. So yeah, it's amazing. It's a massive part of my heart. It's somewhere I will retire to probably soon. I'm going to build a house there, and somewhere I want Freddie to grow up away from tablets and iPhones. And tablets, ecstasy tablets, iPhones, and all this bullshit that, you know, our kids are just, including my son at the moment, you know, they're just lost. They're lost in technology. You know, we've become lazy parents, including myself. You know, you just give your son the iPad or YouTube for a few hours. And yeah, I just feel kids have just lost touch with what being a kid was about in most cases. And I know if Freddie was to grow up in Uganda, I could teach him to be a good human, you know, keep him away from the drugs and the crime and the greed of this country. I've got quite a lot of opinions about it, but yeah, this is where Freddie will grow up in Uganda, hopefully when he's old enough, and he'd hopefully take on the legacy that we've left behind, me and Pete and Joe from my boat.
And when we get lost, what happens? We turn to the drugs, as we've already just said. So sounds like a nice life that you're going to create for Freddie, which is great. And I think that's incredible that Ocean Beach are donating as well. Obviously, this is the home of Hotbed Ibiza. I remember going to Hotbed in the summer and being asked for anyone on the guest list to donate €5. And through that, you made how much?
Yeah, so O Beach have been our biggest supporter just since we started. Dwayne Lineker, who's one of the owners, he's donated God knows what now personally. He sponsors a hell of a lot of children out there through himself. That's through his own money, which, you know, we don't put anything online. It was kind of just done through the kindness, not through ego. Ocean Beach gave us, Dwayne got married this year and his guests were asked to donate to the Abode Project instead of presents. And I think we got just around about £10,000. From his wedding. He's just also given us £15,000 from donations for guest lists for Hotbed, as well as they raised another £25,000 for a charity that my son benefits from called APNIF, which is a special needs charity. So these guys are just constantly supporting us, you know, and they don't need to do it, you know, and they are the only club that support us, which is amazing. And you're thinking Ibiza, you're spending £15 on a bottle of water, and there's children all across Africa, India, Nepal, other countries that are drinking out of muddy puddles, if they're lucky. and you know, people dying of thirst every day, and there's clubs charging $15 a water, £15 for water, and you don't see any of these clubs helping anyone. Well, from what I can see, I think there's some big high profile DJs that do a lot for charity, but I don't see any of these clubs donating any money to build wells in Africa. You know, the cost of a well, to build a well in Uganda, is $2,000. That's like how many bottles of water? 100 bottles of water to build a well. But yeah, that's another subject.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't take much either, does it? Like you said, £5 for everybody on the guest list. It's not a lot to pay, and it makes such a huge difference. I really love the idea of like high profile people starting to get involved in this kind of work as well, because we have, you know, we have this whole thing, we've known whether it's Insta famous or actually famous, we sometimes follow the path that celebrities put out there for us. But these celebrities have these high profiles, and they have the opportunity to use their voice in a way that can be beneficial for the world. And I don't think it takes much to do that. And it just takes a few pounds here and there for people to donate to make such huge differences to people in the world who have absolutely nothing. So I feel like I've said this many, many times to you, but love, love, love the work that you're doing right now.
Thank you. Yeah, I think with the whole influencer thing is something I'm quite outspoken. I'm known for that. With me, I'm a straight shooter. There's no kind of second personality. You just mean, I'm quite raw, and I say how it is. And I think like, the influencers aren't doing enough. You know, they're not influencing. They're making. There's a lot of these, especially with male and female influencers. I seem to follow loads of them just because that's kind of my circle. But some of them have got millions of followers between them. And I think if 10 of the biggest influencers from London, these girls that were 4 years ago working in the city as a PA, and now they've suddenly got a million followers from just standing in front of a camera in designer clothes. You know, they've got a million followers, and between 10 or 15 of them, they've got 15 million followers. I can't remember the last time I saw any influencers do anything for charity, anything for the human race, anything for the homeless, anything for the local community. And this is what our younger generation are inspiring to be. They all want to be influencers. They're looking up to these, and I'm thinking, fucking hell, like, if I can raise, I'm good at raising money. I bet, you know, if I can need to raise £10,000 in 2 days, I can normally do it through my 25,000 followers on Instagram. And I'm thinking, these people aren't doing enough. And I say it all the time, we're not looking out for each other. The homeless problem in London could be eradicated overnight if all of the biggest influencers and DJs came together and maybe just done a massive gig and raised £1 million. You know, it's just, yeah, it's really frustrating, and it's something I'm really passionate about. It's something I'm going to be going in more and more into in 2020, is to try and get the super wealthy DJs to just do a little bit more for charity, and a little bit more for, not even like, you know, I get a lot of stick saying, why are you doing stuff in Africa? Why are you not doing stuff close to home? And yeah, I probably will start doing more stuff close to home. But maybe we need to start focusing on what's around us. And in London especially, everybody's moaning about the homeless situation, and from what I see, blaming it on the governments or Labour or Tories, everyone not doing enough. But yet, we're not doing anything about it. We're just walking past them every day. But we could change that so easy, so, so easy. Not, you don't have to give people money. You just show a bit of love to people, the homeless, give them a bit more confidence, sit down and talk to them. You don't have to give them money. We've got enough stuff in our houses, in our garages, to help these people on the streets. But yeah, love.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't the best, I haven't been the best person over the last 20 years. I've been in prison. I've been in prison in Canada. I've been in prison in the UK. I've been in military prison. I've sold drugs. I've been a bit of a shitbag boyfriend to most girlfriends. You know, I'm no angel, but I do think everyone gets a second chance, tenth chance, but there's a point in your life where some people go through a change, and I've gone through that at 36, 37, and I think I've become a nicer person, and I've seemed to have healed a lot of shitty relationships with mates and people I've fallen out with organically over the last 9 months. I just feel like I've become a better person, and a lot more loving, a lot more caring. But love, 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 as you said, yeah.
Love, love, love. But it is all about love at the end of the day. We have these two sides of the coin. We have love and we have hate, and we have fear, of course, as well, which is part of it all. But I think, yeah, when you move into this higher state of love that we mentioned earlier, and you start to feel that connection for those people around you, you want to do something to make a difference. And going back to what you were saying about the homeless there, you know, I've had many people give me funny looks or pull me up when I've maybe given some money to somebody who's homeless, saying, hey, that person might not even be homeless. But I always just think, if every 10 £1 that I give to somebody homeless on the street, if one or two of them is somebody who is pocketing it and isn't actually homeless, I've still given to eight people. Yeah. And I would rather do that, because what is a pound to most of us? It's nothing. And we're such hoarders. You said, like, you made a really good point there about we've got enough in our garages, in our sheds. We just have to look at how supermarkets throw away food at the end of the day instead of giving them to homeless charities or people on the streets, or homeless people are made to go through bins to find this food. And we have enough there. We have so much in our world, but we sit on it and we hoard it. And obviously we have the top couple of percent who are sitting on so many billions and billions of pounds, who are never going to spend that money in a lifetime. Their children and their children's children aren't going to spend that money in a lifetime. And then we've got people dying and destitute on the street. And it just takes me back to this connect stroke disconnect again. I think when we're connected and we recognize that we are all one, I think you then start to just feel this need to do something about it. And it seems to me that that need is there for you right now.
Yeah, no, totally. I'm just, yeah, I've got everything I need in life now. I've had money, I've lost money, I've now got money again. If I lost money tomorrow, I think I'm in a place now where, you know, I'll be a bit peed off for a couple of days. But you just, I think doing all this stuff in Africa and seeing how much these people look at, they share. You give a kid a banana or an apple or an orange or a cake in Africa, and there's four of them, they will split it into four without even saying split that into four. They won't grab it out of your hands and run off of it. Everything is split out there, and they look after each other in Uganda, in East Africa. And I feel like it just doesn't happen here. It's just dog eat dog at the moment. Not everywhere, but the music industry is kind of dog eat dog. People are just like, want to make loads of money, they want to get to the top. It's about record sales. And I'm very different to other promoters. I never really stand. I try not to boast online about record sales or ticket sales or numbers or how much we're smashing it, because do people want to hear that? You know what I mean? I like to show this is how much we raise for charity, this is how many lives we change. If you look at my inbox now, you know, on Instagram, and you see that hundreds of messages I've had from kids, youngsters saying, I need help, can you help? You've inspired me, your journey's so inspiring. I can't post all them online, but that's the stuff that I buzz off now. And I don't buzz off. Of course, I buzz off ticket sales. It's my business. But I don't do backflips and get super excited knowing that we've absolutely smashed it. And, you know, I always said, amongst all our success with Abode, are we doing enough? Are we doing enough? Are we, for the all these kids that are spending money with us, that are leaving the club on a Monday and having to face reality while we're putting the next party on sale, let's get the next ticket, let's smash it. Are we actually doing enough to support these kids? Which is where Believe came from, because we're absolutely killing it in life as a business. But what these kids are actually coming and are having to face reality on a Monday and Tuesday, and the back base of going back to work and debt and struggles, you know, and how are they going to get to the next wave? But which is where Believe came from, you know, trying to start a party and a foundation where we can help youngsters that might be struggling, you know, to show there is another part side to dance music, and that's what I'm doing with it. You know, I don't want to talk about how successful we are, which is boring and it's gloating and it's boasting, and that's not what I'm about anymore.
Well, I believe in Believe, and I'm very much looking forward to it coming into fruition. And yeah, having that support for people who are going through that come down on the Monday and Tuesday, I think that's a huge thing. Well, I'm really excited to have had the opportunity to do this podcast with you. We move in the same circle of friends. So often when I've spoken about my long-term plan being to set up a school or an orphanage in South or Central America, and then my journey of still being in the party scene but moving from alcohol and drugs, many of our mutual friends have said, you must speak to Kai. And when I started doing these podcasts, I was like, wow, yes, I must speak to Kai. And having, you know, we just met last week, and we had a chat whilst we were on another beautiful walk. And I just, I started to recognise that there was much more alignment between us than what I actually had previously realised from what friends had said. So it's an absolute pleasure to be sat here doing a podcast with you, and I can feel that maybe in the future there'll be some kind of co-creation that we can work on. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that unfolds. And as I mentioned earlier, you spoke about taking your own life, and I'm so happy to see somebody who's been into that dark place sitting here today, only 29 weeks later, and just being so full of positivity and love and feeling connected and having all this incredible stuff to give back to the world. I think the world's a beautiful place if you choose to see it, and we do have to choose it. And it can be lovely to see life's tapestry unfolding, and I can see how it's unfolding for you. I can see how your journey has taken you to this place where you've now just got so much to give, from a really great level of understanding as well, and a great level of being able to connect to the people who are going through the things that you have gone through. As I say, I for one are very, very grateful to be doing this podcast with you. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you. It's my first ever podcast I've ever done. So, I've had a blast. I've really enjoyed talking. I wanted to speak from the heart and speak the truth. And I think you're amazing at what you're doing. I'm looking forward to listening back and listening to other ones that you've done and reading your book, which you've just given me. So thank you for that. So thank you very much.
And there's just one more thing that I would like to add before we come to the end of this podcast. You mentioned to me on the walk over here that you're the least spiritual person. And I just want to comment on that and say that there's many people who are walking this supposed spiritual path and who are talking a good spiritual game, but aren't necessarily living up to the words that they're saying. You, Kai, you are walking the walk. You have worked your way through the darkness, and you are now shining your light for all to see. It doesn't get more spiritual than that in my books. So thank you so much once again, Kai, for joining me on the last episode of Series 1 of The Spirit of Life in Ibiza podcast. There is something that I would like to end this final podcast of the season with. The theme of suicide seems to have inadvertently but intricately woven its way into these podcasts. It was never my intention to bring guests onto the show that have had experiences with the theme of suicide, and nor did I realise this to be the case until it unfolded in front of me. Yet this theme does seem to be present. In the first episode, I spoke of my own suicidal thoughts when I was a teenager. In the third episode, Richard Stokes spoke about the loss of three of his friends to suicide. In the penultimate episode, Lena Sophia spoke about the attempt to take her own life, and now, here in this episode, Kai has also spoken about his suicidal thoughts. That's four out of the six episodes that I have created. It seems to me that we have created a world that is so far away from the true reality of who we are, that many of us struggle so hard to function in it, that we consider removing ourselves from the reality that we have collectively created. This has to change. But for this to change, we have to remember the true reality of who we really are, rather than the creation of what this physical reality has made us become. To do this, we must search within. We must face our demons and reconnect with our true selves and our true wisdom. Then slowly, slowly, step by step, and together, armed with this knowledge, we can consciously and collectively create a world that we are all able to function in. Not only function in, but thrive in, whilst realising our highest potential and perspective of self. This may seem impossible, but there is no problem in humanity that cannot be solved by humanity making a different decision. We just all have to make that decision together. My hope in bringing these podcasts to you is to help people to find a different perspective on the way that we are currently doing things. Just because something has always been done that way doesn't mean that they must continue that way. It is time for us to open our minds to change and a different way of doing things. We all have the power within us to make different, conscious decisions. We all have the power to change. We all have the power to be the best possible versions of ourselves. It has been said many times that change must come from within. So to quote a very famous saying, be the change that you wish to see. Because by being that change, you shine your light on others to do the same. And by being that change, you shine that light through love instead of the anger, aggression, and fear that we currently see. So thank you once again for listening, and please join me for series 2 as we go even deeper into some of the issues that are stopping us from shining our light for all to see. Series 2, coming soon.